Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 34, and we're very glad to be back. We had last week off for the holidays slash Thanksgiving slash Black Friday week. I guess that's what it is now is Black Friday week.
Indeed.
And it's like Black Friday week, and then we have Cyber Monday week. We really enjoyed our time off, and really thank you for being patient with us as we took a day off so that we could come back and talk all about Pixel Slate, and that's the big topic of the day. As you probably already know, as you may have guessed, before we get the show started, I wanted to say, please leave some questions, anything you might want to know about the Pixel Slate in the comments on the live stream over on YouTube. And as the show goes on, maybe in about 20 or 30 minutes, I'm not sure, we'll go through those and find the ones that we think are the most interesting, if we're honest, and then talk about them. But before that, I guess we can just dive into our review, I guess my review. It's hard to talk about this device. It's a very weird device. And not only is it a weird device, I think, in relation to all of Microsoft and Apple's products, which are kind of, the main competitors in this space, but also in relation to Google's products. And that's kind of how I started off my review, talking about how it's just kind of a weird, it's weirdly placed, and it feels like it's kind of looking for a purpose, especially in comparison or side by side with last year's Pixelbook, which there's lots of things to talk about with that. But I guess, first of all, we can just talk about how it's a Chrome OS device. It is a Chrome OS device. And for all intents and purposes, I think most people, and maybe you disagree with me on this, and I'll let you chime in here and give me your thoughts and maybe some of your questions you might have. But I think for most people, they're going to use this device the same way they would use a Pixelbook. Do you agree with that?
Yes. Definitely. If they're the ones buying it. If they actively go out and buy it. They are the audience for a Pixelbook.
Yeah, for sure. That's one thing that's just, an obvious thing that I think keeps a lot of people out of the Pixel Slate is they might not even know it exists. Even with as much marketing and push that Google's put behind all of its hardware products, especially in the last few years, it still pales in comparison to the marketing dollars that Apple's pushing with, the iPad Pro the iPad is, at this point many, many years old, and it's a household name. Whereas Pixel Slate is, I think if we remember that the rest of the world doesn't live on tech Twitter, we remember that a lot of people may not even know the Pixel Slate brand name at all. And so in that way, I think it's just like the Chromebook Pixels that preceded it, and just like the Pixel C, and just like even the Nexus 9, it's like it's starting off with a rough, it's gonna have a rough start, because even if it was the best product ever, and even if we could say unequivocally that it's better than an iPad Pro in every single way, it's still going to have a lot of trouble, because it's just not a, I mean, Google's hardware is just not a household name.
Yeah, but it has the benefit of Chrome OS increasingly being a household name. And compared to when Google announced that very first Chromebook Pixel in 2013 and late in 2015, Chrome OS is advanced so much more. It is a powerful, feature-rich operating system. And beyond that, there are people who have used it, and there is increasingly like a K-12 market and even some college students that are familiar and like using Chrome OS. So timing-wise, the Pixel Slate is a good idea for Google to start experimenting on the form factor.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I guess another thing to talk about is where is this device coming from? And obviously, Chromebooks have been wildly successful in education, as you mentioned. I mean, my wife actually works at an elementary school, and she talks about how every single kid has a Chromebook that has been assigned to them, and they live on that thing at this point, to the point where I think that kids at this point are, this is a sidebar conversation, but I think kids at this point are actually living on Chromebooks to a fault. She says that she has problems with keeping kids off of them whenever she's trying to work with them because they're too stuck playing Roblox or whatever game they're playing on their Chromebooks in school. So, you know, it's great to have technology in education, but, you know, it's just a matter of using it in a productive and helpful way. And I guess that's one thing is I get that even for me, I'm pretty young. And so I had experience using Chromebooks in my high school experience towards the end, I guess, was when Chromebooks started to become more ubiquitous. And so, yeah, I am part of the generation that knows I'm part of a very small subset of the population that actually knows what Chrome OS is, or at least has used it in my daily life. I think anyone who's under the age of 25, 27 can probably say that at some point in their school career, they had to use a Chromebook. And so, yeah, you're right. Absolutely. The Pixel Slate does have that going for it. And you're also right to say that it does have, it's so much more ready. It's so much more ready to be a productivity machine than it was even a year ago. I guess the bigger things that have changed since last year are more like the UI things and making things at one, you know, align with material theme more and to be more touch friendly. Even a lot of these updates for tap targets and making things touch friendly have come out in the last couple months. So it's definitely getting there, but it feels like this is I don't know. It just feels like a very early product. You know, it's like kind of how I felt a little bit with the first Pixel phone. It's like this is an interesting idea, and it would be great to see it go far. But at that point, it was kind of like, you know, just the very first glimpse at something. Where now today, you know. Since the Google Pixel launched, now, you know, the phone is just so much more than it was at that point. So, yeah, I mean, what are your questions? Because you haven't had a chance to use the Pixel Slate outside of the October 9th event, right?
Mm-hmm. Again, my interest from the beginning for this tablet was as a content consumption device. I do have a Pixel Book here, and I do use it alongside a MacBook. But when I first got the Pixel Book, I did the touchscreen. Because of the touchscreen, I tried to use it as that content consumption device, as a tablet with the keyboard folded back. I tried to see if I could do it, but the first stumbling block for me was the idea of having a keyboard on the back and not being able to properly lay it on my on most surfaces because of that keyboard. So that's the first thing. So I guess my question would be, have you tried to not do work on it? Have you tried to find an iPad like experience with it, and are there any good ones?
So I think part of my anyone who read my review probably was able to tell, but I definitely have leaned toward using this so far as a productivity machine, very much so. And my conclusion of the review was you should too, basically, and that this thing is not really a great value for those who are looking for a consumption device. However, I did, you know, I installed Netflix. I have installed Spotify. I've installed, you know, the major content consumption apps just to check them out, see how they work, and they work well. I mean, it's like they do what they are supposed to do. You know, it's not like any, I don't know. My phone's going off. Sorry. You know, there's nothing special about it. It's just like using, I mean, it's identical actually to the experience software wise as using a Pixelbook for those things. I kind of see where you're coming from with the whole keyboard on the back thing. I guess that could be a little bit of a deal breaker for some people. But for me, I don't know. I think that the device is pretty big to use as a content consumption device. I guess that's kind of a double-edged sword because it is big. And so in that regard, it's like, you know, really nice to watch really big, you know, watch movies in really big widescreen or whatever. You know, compared to trying to watch on a phablet, you know, a Pixel 3 XL or an iPad mini or something like that. But on the other hand, it's a big, heavy device. It's as big or bigger than the biggest iPad Pro. So it's a little bit, to me, it feels a little bit unwieldy to use for that use case. I mean, I don't know.
Oh.
What did you say?
It's an overkill. Well, at $1,000, it is an overkill with that Core i5 chip. But anything lower, do you think that? But let's just take me for example. If I want to use it as something that I can, I don't know, use in the evenings, get away from work, is that a thing there? And more broadly, since you've also used the cheaper Acer Chromebook tablet. Is Chrome OS on a tablet a good tablet experience?
Well, I'll just preface this by saying I'm not a tablet person. I haven't bought anymore. Right? Yeah. Like I haven't. The two tablets I've owned in like the last 4 years are like the Acer Chromebook Tab 10, which I reviewed earlier this year, and this one. And so I don't know the tablet use case. To me, for me personally, it's if I didn't have a job that involved writing online, which I do, so I can't avoid that. But if I didn't, it would be watching movies in the car, watching movies on an airplane, traveling, you know, having a screen that you can just that's big enough and good enough for consuming content, but also good in terms of portability. That would be my tablet use case. That doesn't apply to me because no matter where, I travel 5 times a year and every time I'm traveling for work. So it doesn't really make much sense for me to carry, my 12-inch MacBook and a tablet because I'm just going to watch Netflix on my MacBook if I'm going to watch Netflix or whatever. And I have carried my Pixel C. Actually, I lied. I have Pixel C too. So I have carried my Pixel C with me on business trips, but even then, I find myself, in that case, for a lot of different reasons, I found myself just not using it. And so I'm not a tablet person. I just don't use tablets. And so to me, I don't even have that on my mind when I'm thinking about reviewing this device because, I mean, one, not only has Google made it such a good productivity machine, which you can't say that about some tablets, you know, like some of the lower end iPads, it's like I would never even try to do any kind of productive work on them in terms of my job. Because that would just, I'd have to jump through hoops, you know, I'd have to, even like the mobile Safari experience is just not great. There's so many things that if I were to have a the $329 iPad, I just would not use that for productivity. Whereas the $599 Pixel Slate, or in my case, the one I've been reviewing, the $999 Pixel Slate, yes, it's a tablet, but it's a really good productivity machine, I think. For at least my use case. And so, I mean, maybe not someone who's, I don't know, a graphics artist or something, maybe not them, but for me, it is. And so that's kind of the lens that I'm looking at this device through. And from that lens, you know, I guess that's how I'm judging the device. And that's how I'm deciding whether or not it's a good purchase for most people, because I would think that a lot of people are out there who might be looking for this kind of device.
What do you think is Google's angling? Let's do it at a what percentage is it? Is it 50-50 productivity and work, or what split do you think in the advertising we've seen so far at what they announced at the event and how they presented it to us? Do you think Google wants this to be a work device or a play device predominantly?
I don't know. I think it's like 50-50, and it's like, I don't know, like this, the headline of my review is that this is like the B to the AB test of the Pixelbook, which yeah, it's humorous, but like, if you think about the way they marketed the Pixelbook too, it's like, they didn't really know how to market it. It seemed like they marketed the Pixelbook for entertainment and for content consumption as well as being primarily a productivity device. And this feels like it's like, I think to me, I mean, maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'll walk this back, but to me, it seems like the Pixelbook was marketed as like a 60-40 productivity machine. And this is marketed as like a 60-40 consumption machine. At least that's how it seems to me. If you look on the, you know, on the Pixelbook Google Store page, they're primarily showing off, you know, productivity apps, but there's games thrown there, Asphalt Urban 8 or whatever. And, you know, I mean, that's for some reason, Asphalt Urban is like a game that just shows up in every every marketing. I don't know what it is. I guess it's just the go-to racing game. And then on the Pixel Slate, you know, side of things, it's like they're, I guess they're pushing the screen more. And that was one thing we noticed whenever we had our chat with the team, was that they really wanted to emphasize how nice this display is and how nice it is to watch 4K YouTube videos on and Netflix and stuff like that. And so, yeah, they're like showing, like they have like the let your entertainment rule, and they have like, I don't know, Pacific Rim Uprising on the Google Store page. But then they also show all these productivity use cases and all these really great productivity apps. And so, I don't know, it just feels like both of them are like, okay. I don't think there's really that much distinction between the two. At least that's how it seems to me.
The way I perceive it is that there's a distinction in the fact that they didn't include the keyboard in the box. If they did, I would be like, sure, this is a 50-50 play, 50-50 productivity. But since it's an optional accessory, I much more agree with your 60-40 split towards a 60-40 split towards entertainment and fun. So that the idea... If a device is really for work, the primary method of that, the keyboard, which everybody still prefers and uses, should not be an optional and expensive accessory at that.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, that kind of, I don't know, what's one of the things that maybe kind of hurts the Pixel Slate is that it doesn't excel at being a tablet the way the iPad does. You know, like, for instance, the entire Apple Pencil experience is crazy expensive, but it's way better than the Pixel Pen experience. The app ecosystem is way better on iOS for touch and tablet optimized applications. I mean, they have a full-fledged Photoshop coming to iPad Pro if it's not already there. And that's the kind of thing that's just like, that doesn't exist on this side. And those kinds of things basically don't exist on this side of things. Cause even apps that were designed and built to be used with the Pixelbook Pen, there's only like 10 of them, or like 15 of them. I don't know. It's like a very small number in comparison to the breadth of the Play Store. Whereas the iPad is just a really great, tablet. And so, if Chrome OS was more mature in terms of being touch friendly, and I guess one other thing that people have talked about in reviews, I didn't have this experience as much, but a lot of people have been talking about how the touch UI is still not very performant, you know, like lots of little stutters and lags. I haven't really seen that much, but honestly, I haven't used it much because I've used the thing primarily as a docked Chromebook.
Because I'd like to think that the bugginess is on the is because of Android rather than web apps.
Yeah, I didn't use that many. I mean, I actually mentioned this in my review, is that a lot of I honestly am not taking advantage of Android apps as well as Google might want me to because a lot of them have web web counterparts. I mean, Facebook Messenger. I haven't installed my phone because Facebook Messenger on the mobile web basically doesn't exist, or is clunky and terrible to use. On a Pixel Slate, Messenger on the web is really great to use in a Chrome browser. And so it's like installing the Android app is actually, I'm actually losing battery life. I'm losing performance by trying to, you know, I don't want to say emulate, but partially, I guess, emulate an Android app. And so I honestly not really using. I mean, my big ones are like Spotify, Slack, Facebook Messenger, like Google Home app, for instance. I mean, I manage all my Nest stuff on Nest.com. There's not a Google Home web portal thing yet. But, you know, like those four examples are like, the Spotify web client is better to use on Pixel Slate if you're using the keyboard at least. You know, the Android Messages is better to use in the browser. It's basically the same thing. You know, it doesn't matter. The app is not really an app. And then the third one is, you know, Facebook Messenger. So like in my case, those are like my big three or whatever. And so I don't know. I'm just not really using Android apps that much. Twitter.com. Twitter is an app that I use on my Android phone all the time. And I would rather use it on the web, on my Chromebook than use the windowed Android app.
So what I'm hearing a lot of is that when Google first added Android apps to Chrome OS, and then a few years later they announced Chrome OS coming to tablets, many people, I think myself included, thought that this was Google's play to get to get back into tablets, which is, I think, a sizable enough market that they don't want Apple and the iPad to run away with it completely. There should be some competition. And I guess I'm starting to question whether Google wants Chromebook tablets to be Chrome OS tablets, to be consumer-y in any way, or whether they just see it as an extension of this Chromebooks and productivity. Because if you think about it, Google cannot just make a Chrome OS tablet that is optimized for content consumption, because it would be way, the advertising message would be sort of confusing. Can you buy a 200 Chrome OS tablet and expect a good productivity experience on it? There's no way for Google to properly differentiate and train customers on that, and they'll just be shooting themselves in the foot. So at the base level, they need to make every Chrome OS tablet a good productivity, and that adds costs, that adds some cost, chips-wise, design-wise. They can never truly optimize Chrome OS for just like a touch input, because at the end of the day, they still also need to do good productivity.
Yeah, I mean, the crutch with Android on tablets was that the developers never cared and they never built apps for tablets. That was always the thing that made, I mean, it's kind of a positive feedback loop. If you don't have developers, you know, Ballmer, developers. If you don't have developers actually working on apps, it makes the tablet experience bad. And if the tablet experience is bad, people won't buy your tablet. If people don't buy your tablet, developers have no monetary incentive to build apps for a tablet. And so it's like you have to find a way to get into a positive feedback loop of these products selling and then developers realizing that, oh, this is a good place to invest and building for them. And then that will make the ecosystem better and so on and so on. And that was the problem with Android tablets, or one of the biggest problems with Android tablets, was they just didn't have the incentive to actually build the really good apps. And so it seems like Google has like tried to pull strings with little developers here and there, like Autodesk Sketchbook or whatever, to like get them to use the Pixelbook Pen features, or what, you know, optimize for the Pixelbook Pen, optimize for the Pixel Slate. And those developers have, but the problem remains. I'll just use Spotify as an example. Spotify is like the most popular music streaming service. And if you install it on your Pixel Slate without the keyboard attached, so if you install on your Pixel Slate, you have no keyboard attached, and you open it up, you get, I'll show you. Well, actually, I won't show you because the people listening to the podcast won't understand. I'll describe it. You get 90% blank space, like a solid 90%. Like it's just black space. There's nothing. It's because the app has not been built for a large display. And so the problem with Android tablets that apps weren't optimized is still the same problem today. It's just on a different operating system. And so what that unfortunately leads to is you can use these apps windowed if you have a keyboard attached and use it as a Chromebook, or, you know, you can just use it as a Chromebook, in which case using Android apps doesn't really make that much sense, because most of the ones you would be using in tablet mode have better alternatives in the browser and are better to use in browser with a mouse and keyboard. And so I guess it's like, you know, old problems haven't gone away.
And nothing they have done with the Pixel Slate or the premise of Chromebook on tablets is encouraging for to developers to optimize their apps. And in a way, I think the best possible outcome for Google here is for all these companies to make killer web apps. Like Spotify on the web is great. Messenger on the web is great. So I think if they want to have some success with Chrome OS tablets, I think what they're hedging on is the web and Chrome becoming a good enough experience for them that developers will put more work and value into just creating a very good web experience. And that might take a while, but it could be their only solution for Google in the face of very good iPad apps.
Thankfully, alongside investing, trying to get Android apps running on tablets. Well, I guess, okay, one thing that I haven't mentioned is games, which is a whole other use case, which I don't play games on phones and I don't really play games on tablets. And so I actually haven't really done that on this. I installed one game and played it for like 2 seconds and never used it again. So like that's one case where some people might actually like the tablet aspect of this, but and those games, I know there are some games that are actually built to work well on larger screens. That's one thing, but I forgot where I was going with that. What's up?
I tried to play, recently I tried to install a first person shooter on the Pixelbook and it was so hard to hold it without the keyboard on the back interrupting. Or if I just held the screen in like a weird tent-like angle, I felt like I was going to break the screen. It's not a good experience playing games on a 10-inch tablet, unoptimized games on a 10-inch tablet.
Right. And I'm not sure how, like, I'm not sure how the performance is affected by it being Chrome OS, because I know, you know, I know that Android apps running on Chrome OS are not emulated in the most pure sense of the word, because they're actually, they're running natively or like partially natively. Is that the correct way to put it? Regardless of, I don't know how running a game on a Chrome OS device with the exact same hardware specs would run versus, and if the Pixel Slate, for example, with the exact same hardware were running Android, how the performance of some of those, you know, more intensive games would be affected by being on Chrome OS versus Android. I think they're slightly just they're impeded somewhat, but still playable, and that's why. So I don't know. It's like that's unfortunate. And I haven't tested that. I don't know for sure, but I think that's the case. So even that use case is kind of like hampered a little bit by it being Chrome OS. But I guess one thing I just remembered was that the web itself is still not very touch friendly. A lot of the web just is not, actually I just did it. I was trying to click new or tap new tab on Chrome and I closed the tab instead. It's just like, I mean, not only is the Chrome browser, you know, itself barely more touch friendly than it was before, but websites, you know it's like Google can't force websites to become touch friendly, and you know, so it's like right out the gate it's just a little bit unfortunate. So I guess to me, I got long story short, is the tablet experience, like running apps in full screen other than the Chrome browser, Android apps, is just like suffering the same issues. Because I mean, look at this. Let me just show you this. This is Facebook Messenger. This is the login screen. That's what shows up when you open up Facebook Messenger. It's like, it's basically like all of these text entry fields that go all the way across this 10-inch or 12-inch display. It's just ridiculous. And Facebook is like, you know, it's a AAA developer. There's no reason for them to not have apps that don't, I mean, other than the fact that Android tablets just don't exist. Like, I don't know. It's just unfortunate. It's the same problem. And so what I found myself doing, long story short, I found myself living with it on the keyboard attached and just using it as a Chromebook. And then that brings me to my final conclusion on this, which is if all of this is true, and if you're going to just use it as a Chromebook, then why would you buy this and not the Pixelbook? What are the benefits of spending the extra money and getting this over the Pixelbook? And the answers are better display, slightly larger display, better speakers, two front firing speakers, fingerprint sensor, and a second camera on the back. And that's it.
Yeah, and what you're describing are specs that most people do not care about.
Exactly. The audio output on the Pixelbook is not great, but it's not bad for what you're using it for. Not to mention the Pixelbook has a headphone jack.
Yes.
And the Pixel Slate does not. So it's like, I guess what it came down to for me, and it's kind of unfortunate for Google that they did this, but they put the Pixelbook on a crazy sale the last week. And, you know, it's been $999 MSRP, still is, since it launched. And I don't think that's going to change until next year when we see the Pixelbook 2. And this week it's been on sale for $699. And that's is that the sixth generation i5 or the seventh generation i5?
Seventh, we're on eight now.
So the Pixel Slate is eighth generation i5, and the Pixelbook is seventh generation i5. And performance-wise, I don't think there's that much difference. And so what happened this week is if you buy the eighth generation i5 Pixel Slate and you buy the Google Pixel keyboard, which is a whole other story, and I'm about to get into that, Google Pixel Slate keyboard, you will be paying $500 more this week for that setup than you would if you bought the $699 Core i5 7th Gen Core i5 Pixelbook. And the conclusion there is very easy. Don't buy the Pixel Slate, buy the Pixelbook. It's that simple. And so, I don't know. It just that's just how the cookie crumbled, I guess.
So the keyboard, this keyboard,
yeah,
no fiasco.
Yeah. So there's two keyboards as of this podcast. The first keyboard is the Google Pixel Slate keyboard, aptly named. And the second keyboard is the Bridge G-Type keyboard. And my takeaway, I actually did my review on the Bridge. I kind of bundled in my Pixel Slate keyboard review with the Pixel Slate itself because I feel like they are necessary for each other, as we've concluded in this discussion. But so I guess my takeaway on the keyboards is that they both have pretty noticeable compromises, different compromises. I'm positive. It sounds like I'm being super negative about this device. And I think if the Pixelbook didn't exist and the Pixel Slate lived in a bubble and the Pixel Slate was a little bit more affordable, then I don't have many complaints. I really don't. In terms of hardware quality, I mean, the build is super premium. It's super nice. Going back to Pixel Slate itself. And it's just really, I mean, it's really good by itself. It's just really bad in comparison to the alternatives. And I guess going back to Pixel Slate keyboard, the big problem with the Pixel Slate keyboard is that you cannot use it on your lap. I'll show you why, and I'll describe why for those that are listening. This is what the Pixel Slate keyboard looks like. And the problem is this keyboard part is attached by this flimsy little fabric. That's how the keyboard part is attached. If this was a hinge, it would be perfectly fine. If it was a hinge, it would be great. But it's attached by this fabric. And so when you're sitting with it on your lap, the fabric kind of goes this way or that way. And so there's no rigidity to it. And the tablet part, the Slate part, is super heavy. And so it just falls over, either falls over this way or falls over this way. And so it's just an ergonomic nightmare. The keyboard's build or the way they designed it to work is just a nightmare. So immediately, I mean, that basically ruins it for this accessory for me, because if we've ruled out using this as a content consumption device, we're going to use it primarily as a productivity Chromebook. It needs to be able to work like a laptop, and I need to be able to sit with it on my lap. So yeah, that's the Slate keyboard.
And does it feel to you to be how much is it? $199?
Yeah, it's $200.
Do you feel like this is a $200 accessory?
Can you? If it didn't have the ergonomic issues, then yes, because I have to say that the typing experience on it is as good or better than the Pixelbook, and the Pixelbook is widely regarded as And I agree, one of the best typing or one of the best keyboards out there right now. They really did learn a lot from the Pixelbook, and the typing experience on like actually typing the keys themselves feel wonderful. Like I think I enjoy typing on this more than a MacBook easily. It's smooth as butter. I guess that's the best way to put it. And the move to rounded keys is also a win because I've been typing on rounded keys with my Logitech for a while, and it really, really does help with accuracy and speed, I think. In my opinion, it has a little bit of a learning curve, but after about a month, I'm way faster on round keys than I am on square. And then the trackpad itself is, you know, it's a diving board trackpad. So it's like old style MacBook where it's like, you have to press on this side. You can't press on the top because it's not force touch. So it's like, it's a mechanical trackpad, which is unfortunate for $200, but it is what it is. And, it feels premium. It feels nice quality. I like the feel of using the keyboard. I like the feel of using the keyboard if it's on a desk. I hate using the keyboard if it's anywhere but on a flat surface. So yeah.
Yeah. Again, like as I said earlier, if this were included, I would definitely, most people would probably ignore the issue of it being flappy and flapping around on your lap, but it is not. You have to shell out for this in a universe where any Bluetooth keyboard will work with this.
Absolutely. And actually, one of my favorite things to do with it, I'll throw this in here, and I'll actually put a link in the Alphabet Scoop post after this for you to check this out if you want this keyboard. But this is the Logitech K780 keyboard, and it has this dock on the top for phones and laptops and stuff. And I have really enjoyed just setting the pixel slate on it and just using that to dock. And then also, I just have like an MX Master mouse, and just, you know, I haven't had any of the problems with Bluetooth that some of the people have been talking about, some of the reviewers have been talking about with the Pixel Slate. So that's wonder. It's wonderful for me using it as a productivity machine. And if you want to pick it up and walk in the living room or like take it around as a tablet, then, you know, the keyboard and the mouse stay in your office or stay on the desk. Now, the other thing this week that we took a look at, I forgot to talk about this, is the Bridge keyboard. This is the G-Type, which is, in my review, I basically talked about how it solves all the problems that the Pixel Slate keyboard has and then introduces other new ones that are fun. So the Pixel Slate keyboard is awesome. It's like an excellent keyboard in terms of the actual typing and trackpad experience, in my opinion. And the G-Type is the opposite. The G-Type is perfect and wonderful from an ergonomic perspective. You basically just dock your Pixel Slate on it. You just take your Pixel Slate, you slide it into the little hinges. It works exactly like the Bridge keyboards for iPad. And, you know, it just docks like a laptop, and it immediately turns your Pixel Slate into a Pixel Book, basically, for an extra $160. So it's $40 cheaper than the Pixel Slate keyboard. And it is way better from an ergonomic perspective. You don't have any problems with the tablet wobbling back and forth when you're trying to use it on your lap. And it's also just worse in terms of typing. It's just not, I mean, it's basically like using any other cheap Bluetooth keyboard that you would find on Amazon for 20 or 40, 30 bucks. So that's that. What should we do? Should we look at some questions that people had?
Definitely.
All right. Let's see. Someone says, my intent with the Slate would be to replace my Pixelbook, which I absolutely enjoy and use as my daily device. This is Stephen Orr. He's got a good name. Hmm. I'm curious as to the performance difference between each of the versions being offered. So I have used the i5 Pixelbook and I've used the i5 Pixel Slate. From a performance perspective, obviously they're different generations. So I think the Pixel Slate is ever so slightly ahead in raw performance, and I think the benchmarks would show that too. But I will say the Pixel Slate, I think, needs a little bit more time to iron out some of the animations, like multitasking stuff, and I think those things will be ironed out because Chrome OS releases come out, you know, once a month or whatever. So, you know, I think those things will be ironed out. But for now, I would say the experience is just slightly different. I think the performance, raw performance, is better slightly on the Pixel Slate than the Pixel Book. But in terms of actual software optimization, I think the Pixel Slate's a little behind because the Pixel Book's been out for a year now and it's been slowly getting better.
Awesome. Very curious why Steven would wants to update his Pixel Book already. I'd be very interested in hearing that reason. A year old, it should still be a solid experience, and it has several more years of Chrome OS support. So I'm very curious on potential upgraders to the Slate from the Book. So do chime in.
Yeah, for sure. I can't really think. I mean, as I mentioned, the only things are like fingerprint sensor and like, you know, I guess the ability to detach and use it as a tablet, if you have a specific need for that, if there's like a specific app that you would like to use with the Pixelbook Pen for some reason, if you're an artist and, you know, you're thinking about buying the Pixel Slate or if you're trying to decide between Pixelbook and Pixel Slate and assuming the sale ends, which I think it's ending tonight, by the way, then, you know, if it's like $1,000 Pixelbook versus $1,200 with the keyboard Pixel Slate, and you know for a fact that you have a specific use case you want to use in tablet mode, then I can see why or where that, you know, where that comparison might come from and why someone might want to move to the tablet. But I am also curious, Steven, feel free, if you're still on the show and want to comment, feel free to let us know why it is you're looking to move to the Pixel Slate. David Belinsky says, I love the Pixel Book. Is the pen working better on the Slate? The answer is it works exactly the same. I have the pen right here. It's exactly the same pen. It is just blue instead of white. And it works exactly the same. All of the apps work exactly the same. In my experience, the touch latency, which is not as good as an iPad, unfortunately, anywhere close, is about the same. You know, it's not as, you know, I don't know. It's basically the same thing. So that's that. Let's see. Do you think any non-keyboard folio cases will come out? Yes, those already exist. They're already available on the Google Store. So there are a couple cases available from, I think, like Incipio or a couple other makers. So go check those out. For instance, there's the Incipio Esquire Series Folio. It looks like that's a standing case. I'm not sure, but it looks like there are already those things. And if they're not, there's definitely things coming. Someone asks, will we see a Pixelbook 2? Almost certainly.
This time next year, most likely.
Yeah, that's probably going to happen. In which case, it will get even more confusing in what to recommend and what not to recommend. I guess maybe next year, the Pixelbook 2 will maybe have more differentiating features, and then we'll see the Pixel Slate, or we'll see the original Pixelbook be discontinued, and then maybe there will be more differentiating aspects and discounts on the Pixel Slate side, which will make, you know, I guess next year we might see a higher end Pixel Book that's like up in the $1,200 plus range. And we might also at the same time see the Pixel Slate drop by a couple hundred dollars, a few hundred dollars, in which case suddenly the Pixel Slate is a lot more attractive and makes a lot more sense. But then again, the original Pixel Book will still exist. You just might not be able to buy it from Google anymore and still be able to buy it pretty cheap. So that argument probably won't be going away. Someone says, hey, I just wanted to tell you, you have a viewer from Norway. Thank you, Sophie, for watching and following along with us. I'm very honored to have you. Steve says, I'll be sticking with my Pixel Book. Good. You should. Mason says, why would you upgrade from the Pixel Book? And he says, because new. Duh. I guess that's an argument. If you just have a lot of, you know, a lot of discretionary spending to do, then by all means, get new stuff. It's nice and shiny. So
and it becomes cheap enough. I think that's a valid reason to buy it.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're that big of a Google fan, it's a piece of history. You know, people who have a Pixel C right now are, yeah, they've got a collector's item for sure. Also, I didn't talk about this at all, but the back of the thing is really, like, really, we noticed this at the event, but it like picks up grease and fingerprints like super easily. So yes, it's shiny on the front. On the back, it's matte and very fingerprinty. Anything else we should talk about with this before we move on? I can't think of, I mean, I'm sure we're going to end the show and think about some important topics that we didn't really touch on, but I think we pretty much have it covered.
More than anything, probably in 6 months, this is worth a re-review when,
definitely, when
performance is smoothed out. Maybe there's a discount in 6 months. Who knows? It'll be interesting to take another look at this product.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, Chrome OS is always evolving. And so I'm sure we'll see the experience on the tablet side get better. And maybe, Google will be able to convince more and more developers to update their apps. It would be nice if we had to, you know how we do articles every single time an app is updated with Material Theme. It would be nice to do an update article every time an app is optimized for Pixel Slate.
The dream.
All right. Well, that closes out our Pixel Slate section in the Q&A. If you have any further questions, feel free to drop a comment over on 9to5google.com at the Alphabet Scoop article, and we'll be sure to get to you. Sorry if we missed you. Also, this week we had Project Fi, or I guess now that's Google Fi.
Yes.
Talk about a little bit.
Announced in 2015, it's Google's MVNO is finally dropping the project status. So that is a very good sign that it's here to stay. And the big news is that it now works on most Android devices and iPhones. The important caveat is that you're not going to get access to Google Fi's cellular network switching. So in the US, Google has partnerships with T-Mobile, US Cellular, and Sprint to offer net to get network access. And traditionally, Google Fi's big appeal was the ability to switch between those three networks so that you can absolutely get the best LTE signal.
Yeah, but for sure.
On a regular, so if you have like a Galaxy or a OnePlus, all you get is the T-Mobile network. You will have a Project Fi service and all the other features that comes with, like 24/7 support, the good international roaming group.
Pretty good prices on unlimited data.
Yeah, but only from T-Mobile. So that may be a caveat to you. So that's the big news of the day, these new compatible with Fi phones. And this will be very interesting to see whether Google can make a big impact in the carrier market. I feel like this was a long time coming. Hopefully, Google is going to advertise this like crazy. And it will be interesting to see if they can make any impact whatsoever in the market with this expanded support.
Yeah, I mean... They're advertising this on Google.com right now, so hopefully they'll be able to pick up some new subscribers. My experience with Fi has always been positive, but I guess like you said, unless you do a T-Mobile prepaid situation, I think Project Fi is like one of the best values for your dollar, especially if you only use like a gig or two of data per month.
Really good deal.
You know, it's basically, I don't know, it comes down to like $30 or $40 for a single line for a couple gigs. And so it's pretty good deal.
I do have to admit that Verizon and AT&T probably have better networks than
for sure. I after using Project Fi for 2 years, I ended up switching to Verizon because of that. And it ended up being worth the extra $30 a month, to be on the better network.
So, where I think Google is going to really succeed with this now that it has iPhone support is international stuff. This is a very great deal for travelers. And maybe they'll end up picking up more Pixel users or whatnot. But there is a market right now of people that should subscribe to Fi if they're going overseas or something like that. So it has a built-in market, and maybe from there it can pick up users.
Yep. Also, this week we had some more leaks of the Pixel 3 Lite. I don't know where that name came from. I'm pretty sure it was just made up.
That's actually a good question of what is Google going to call this phone? Pixel 3 Mini? SL?
Pixel 3
XL.
3R.
The R doesn't mean anything. But that's... is this product going to happen? It's like, it seems like it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it'll happen. I think it'll be announced in India, and I think it will be for India. And that's the end of that story, I think. Also, this week, we had some other Pixel 3 stories. We spent almost all of the show talking about Pixel Slate, so we don't really have much time to dive into much. But we had some Pixel 3 stories. Our Damien did a comparison of Nightsight to Nightscape, which, unsurprisingly, the winner came out on Nightsight for that one. Google launched a really, really cringy ad campaign. Yeah. Ugh, it's the worst.
It felt so... Okay, so they shot it in Los Angeles, and it felt like they were all actors, like stereotypical Los Angeles actors. It wasn't good. It's a good message. I'll give them that, but maybe they can deliver it in a less cringy way. I honestly prefer that Bill Gates and Jerry Seinfeld, they did Microsoft ads like ages ago for like, I forgot which operating system it is, but that was kind of better.
Anything was better than this. This is like, who's going to watch these, by the way? They're 6 minutes long.
Yeah, it's Google. People on YouTube. That's the only audience for this. They're not going to do any considerable airtime showing this. That'd be madness.
I just don't get it. Like, they're very obviously advertisements. And so, you know, who's going to sit down and click on this and watch it and be like, I don't know. I just don't see it. I don't see anyone making it. So like, you know how YouTube gives you statistics on like how long people stay watching your video before they click away? These have to be like 5 seconds.
Also, my biggest annoyance with this is name the bloody iPhone. They were all so coy about not naming what phone everybody is switching from. And like all the phones had cases. And they didn't even show the front of the phone. It was just the back. And that was ridiculous. Name your competitor. We all know it. Yeah, they know another, it.
Google is very, very careful about that. Another example, actually, I noticed this week was on the new Fi site. If you click check eligibility with my phone, it shows like 7 different manufacturers or 10 different manufacturers. And it shows logos for every single one of them. And then the Apple one says Apple in bold letters. And all the others are logos. It's funny.
I mean, they did call out the iPhone XS at the event for the Nightsight demo, so I don't know why they
maybe
lost that,
maybe
it.
That's an Apple thing, though. Maybe that's like a...
branding.
Maybe that's like a Google... I mean, with the example of Fi's website, then not using Apple's logo, maybe that's an example of Apple not allowing that.
Yeah. That'd be fascinating.
There were some smart display things this week, too. I wrote about how Black Friday deals were like made this past Friday like a really, really great time to buy lots of smart home stuff. And a lot of you did. I saw lots of clicks on all those links. So that was good. Some new features came to the Lenovo Smart Display, basically Home Hub functionality. LG's Google Assistant Smart Display launched this week.
Yeah.
And finally, after 9 months, 10 months, 11 months.
Yeah. We're almost approaching next CES, and Sony, which Google announced as launching one, hasn't done anything. So I guess it'll be 1 year. Maybe they'll announce it at this CES, but that's a bit wild.
Maybe. We've got gift guides flowing out, so I just wanted to shout that out. We have gift guides coming from each of us personally, and then we also have tons of gift guides like best accessories for Pixelbook, best low-end Android phones, best premium Android phones. So if you're looking for gifts for your family, be sure to check those out over at 9to5Google. I think that pretty much rounds out the show for the week. Was there anything really important we should talk about before we just close this out?
No, not really.
Pretty slow week. It's getting slower and slower since October 9th, basically. Except today was pretty big, and I guess yesterday with the Slate reviews was also pretty big, but you know, it's just getting slower. The year's coming to an end, and you know, as the holidays get closer, people I guess tech companies are, you know, slowing down their release cycles going into the holidays, and then everything will kick back off in January with CES and all of the many, many, many Google Assistant powered products that we'll be covering there.
Oh, yeah.
So excited for that. So yeah, in the meantime, head over to 9to5google.com, check out all those gift guides. And we'll be back here next week. Not sure what we're going to talk about because I'm not sure what's going to happen in the news between now and then. But until then, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish every Thursday morning. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen directly over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in. As always, thanks to Abner for joining me, as always. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.